All right, get ready, because today we're going deep into a story with everything, slavery, forgiveness, and unbelievable power dynamics, all in a letter barely a page long.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking Paul's letter to Philemon. Are you with me?
Absolutely. It's a fascinating look into early Christianity, and it makes us wrestle with questions that still matter today.
Totally. So picture this. You're Philemon, a wealthy Christian in ancient Colossae. Life is good. Business is booming. You're leading a house church.
You're right.
And then, bam, you get a letter from your friend Paul, who, oh yeah, just so happens to be in prison.
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. He's asking you to forgive someone who has wronged you deeply. That's the situation. And we're going to untangle it all using Dr. Daniel Darko's lecture series on the prison epistles.
His work is great.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and what makes this even more interesting is this whole debate about who exactly this person is, the one Philemon's supposed to forgive.
Oh, totally.
We're talking Onesimus, a name you're going to hear a lot today.
A lot.
Was he a runaway slave begging for a second chance, or was he a friend of Philemon sent to help Paul? The answer changes everything.
For sure. Okay, so before we get to the drama with Onesimus, let's set the scene.
Okay.
First things first. We know for sure Paul wrote this letter, unlike some of the other prison epistles where there's debate about the author.
Exactly right. And most scholars agree it was written around 60 to 63 CE from Rome, probably around the same time as the letter to the Colossians. In fact, there are tons of connections between the two letters.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Similar greetings, some of the same people show up, and both mention Onesimus.
Oh, wow.
It suggests these two communities were really closely linked and dealing with similar issues.
Fascinating. Okay, so back to Philemon. Who was this guy?
Well, based on what we can put together, he seems to have been a big deal in Colossae.
Okay.
We're talking wealthy, probably a businessman, and definitely influential enough to have a house church meeting in his home.
Wait, hold on. House church? What does that even mean?
Great question. Back then, Christianity was still new, and with no dedicated church buildings, early Christians often met in homes.
Right.
In Philemon's case, his wealth and status probably made his home the go-to spot for the local Christian community.
So, like, imagine having a Bible study and it turns into a full-blown church service all in your living room.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay, I'm starting to get a picture of this guy, successful, influential, leading this early church community. But there's another layer to this, right? Paul was the one who brought Philemon to Christianity.
Exactly. That's why this letter isn't just a command from an apostle. It's a plea from a mentor to someone he's deeply connected to. It makes you wonder how you'd feel if you were Philemon getting this loaded request from someone you owe so much to.
Man, talk about pressure. Okay, so we've got Paul writing from prison, this complicated relationship with Philemon, and then this mysterious Onesimus at the heart of it all. Let's figure out who this guy might have been.
Okay. Dr. Darko lays out three main theories that scholars debate. First, the classic runaway slave who wronged Philemon in some way, maybe by stealing or just disobeying.
Right.
Second, maybe Onesimus was trying to escape a bad situation and ran to Paul, hoping he'd smooth things over with Philemon.
Okay.
And third, the most unexpected theory, what if Philemon actually sent Onesimus to help Paul while he was in prison?
Oh, wow.
Each scenario totally changes how we see everything else unfold.
That's wild. I'm already kind of leaning toward the runaway slave theory because it seems like there's so much tension around him coming back.
Yeah.
What does Dr. Darko think?
He seems to favor that interpretation, too, pointing to clues in the text that suggest Onesimus is scared to go back to Philemon.
Oh, okay.
But before we jump to conclusions, let's see what Paul actually says about this whole thing. Okay, so let's dive into this letter. It's really amazing how Paul, even though he's a prisoner, handles this super delicate situation.
Yeah.
He could have just pulled the apostle card and ordered Philemon around.
Yeah, you would think that'd be the go-to, right?
Exactly. But he takes a completely different approach.
Oh, wow.
It's all about persuasion, recognizing Philemon's free will, and the deep respect he has for their relationship.
So he's not just laying down the law. He's appealing to Philemon's better nature.
Exactly. He reminds Philemon of their shared faith, calls him brother, and even offers to pay any debts Onesimus might owe.
Wow. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is. But doesn't that kind of undermine the message of grace and forgiveness?
Right.
It almost feels transactional. Like, hey, forgive him. I'll cover the costs.
That's a great point. It definitely adds another layer to think about. Is it just generosity? Or is it a calculated move to try and sway Philemon?
Right.
It's fascinating how Paul seems to balance these motivations.
Yeah.
On the one hand, he's advocating for Onesimus, but he's also careful not to overstep with Philemon.
It's like he's walking this tightrope between authority and persuasion.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was an apostle. He could have just thrown his weight around.
Exactly. And that's what makes this letter so powerful. It's a masterclass in using influence. Not through force, but through genuine appeal and understanding. It makes you think, how often do we try to change someone's mind by force instead of persuasion?
Yeah, guilty as charged sometimes.
Okay, so Paul is clearly trying to change how Philemon sees Onesimus.
Uh-huh.
He even uses these interesting words describing him as useless before, but useful now. What's going on there?
Well, this gets to the core of how slaves were viewed back then.
Right.
They were basically property, only valuable for their work.
Right.
A useless slave was a burden, someone who didn't make any money.
So Paul was acknowledging that Onesimus might have messed up, even cost Philemon money, but now he's saying that he's become useful.
Right, but here's the twist. He's not talking about Onesimus being useful just to make money.
Yeah.
He's saying that Onesimus has become valuable to him personally in prison.
Oh.
It's this huge shift in perspective.
So instead of defining Onesimus by his labor or his past mistakes, Paul is emphasizing his changed heart, his faith, his service to Paul himself. Exactly. It's this beautiful idea that a person's worth isn't tied to their economic output. It's about their character, their relationships, their spirit. Paul's basically saying, look beyond what Onesimus did and see who he is now.
Powerful stuff. And this really challenges us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How often do we judge people based on their usefulness to us, their job title, their social status?
All the time, Philemon forces us to confront that head on. Are we treating people with dignity and respect because they're human beings, made in the image of God, or are we only valuing them for what they can do for us?
Man, that hits home. Okay, so Paul is making this passionate plea for Onesimus, but there's another detail that Dr. Darko pointed out that I found really clever. The letter isn't just addressed to Philemon, it's also to the whole church that meets in his house.
Such a brilliant move, right? It's subtle, but so effective. Paul is making this a public thing. He's saying, hey, Philemon, your whole community is watching how you handle this.
Talk about pressure. It's like Paul is leveraging social pressure to encourage Philemon to do the right thing.
Exactly. It highlights how important it is to be aware of how our actions affect others.
Right.
How we treat people, especially those who are vulnerable or have wronged us, can have a huge impact on everyone around us.
So it's not just about Philemon forgiving Onesimus, it's about setting an example for the entire Christian community.
Absolutely. Right? It's about creating a culture of grace, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And it raises a question for all of us. What kind of example are we setting in our families, our workplaces, our communities?
Right.
Are we fostering environments where people feel safe to mess up, to ask for forgiveness, to make things right? Or are we holding on to grudges and just continuing cycles of judgment and exclusion?
That's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
So we've got Paul's masterful persuasion, this radical redefinition of a person's worth, and the subtle pressure of the community watching Philemon's every move.
Mm-hmm.
What else does Paul throw into the mix to try and convince Philemon?
Well, there's this one line that really stayed with me. Paul tells Philemon to say nothing of your owing me, even your own self.
Whoa, okay, that's heavy. Is he guilt-tripping him? Like, remember, Philemon, you owe me big time.
It could definitely be interpreted that way, but I think it's more about reminding Philemon of how much he owes Paul for bringing him to faith.
It's like he's saying, remember, Philemon, you wouldn't be who you are today without the grace and forgiveness you receive through Christ.
Exactly. And now he's asking Philemon to extend that same grace and forgiveness to Onesimus. It's like a mirror being held up to Philemon, showing him how powerful love and reconciliation can be, which he himself has experienced.
So it's not just about repaying a debt. It's about living out the values of the gospel, about embodying that same spirit of forgiveness that changed his life.
Right. It's a call to action.
Uh-huh.
A challenge to go beyond just saying the words and to actually live them out.
Wow, I'm seeing this letter in a whole new light now.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're almost at the end of this tiny but explosive letter.
Right.
What else does Paul pull out of his rhetorical toolbox?
Well, he kind of drops a pretty big hint at the end.
Yeah.
He tells Philemon to get a guest room ready because he's hoping to visit soon.
Oh, wow. That's next level pressure. It's like he's saying, I'm coming to see for myself if you've done what I asked.
It definitely adds another layer of accountability.
Yeah.
But imagine being Philemon at that point. You've got this super important apostle.
Right.
Your mentor asking you to do something so difficult. And now he's saying he's coming to check up on you.
Talking about being put on the spot. I mean, What could Philemon even say? It's almost like Paul is forcing his hand.
It's a bold move for sure, but I think it shows how deep their relationship is.
Right.
There's this feeling of trust there.
Yeah.
A belief that Philemon will do the right thing.
It also makes you think about how Paul saw his role as an apostle.
Mm-hmm.
Was it always about commands and authority? Or was there also this part of gently persuading and trusting people to do the right thing?
That's a great question. It really challenges that traditional view of Paul as this strict, unbending figure.
Right.
In Philemon, we see a different side of him. Compassionate, strategic, willing to work within these complex human relationships.
So the letter ends, and we don't know Philemon's response. Did he welcome Onesimus back? Mm. Did he go even further and set him free? We just don't know.
We don't, but that's part of what makes this story so interesting.
Right.
It really makes us think, what do you think Philemon did?
I'm honestly torn. Part of me wants to believe he did the right thing.
Yeah.
That Paul's words really moved him to forgive Onesimus and reconcile with him. But part of me also knows how hard that would have been in those times.
Exactly. It would have been a huge deal, a challenge to the very structure of Roman society.
Yeah.
It really shows how powerful Paul's letter was that it even made Philemon consider doing something so radical.
And even though we don't know the ending, the story itself is a powerful message for us today.
It is.
It makes us face these difficult truths about power, forgiveness, and making things right.
Absolutely. And it reminds us that these aren't just abstract ideas. They're real experiences that affect our relationships every day.
Yeah.
How do we respond when someone wrongs us? Are we quick to judge and punish, or do we try to show grace and understanding?
It's easy to talk about forgiveness, but Philemon really forces us to think about the messy reality of it all.
Right.
It makes us ask tough questions about our own lives and choices.
And that's what's so great about this letter. It doesn't give easy answers.
Right.
But it starts a conversation. It pushes us to really think about how we handle power and relationships in our own lives.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Philemon,
yeah,
I'm left with this question. What would it look like to really live out that radical spirit of forgiveness and reconciliation in the world today? It's a challenge, but one that could change our communities and relationships for the better if we're willing to embrace it.
I totally agree. And as you continue thinking about that,
yeah,
I encourage you to read Philemon for yourself and really think about what it says.
Yeah.
You might be surprised by what you discover and how it challenges you to live a more just and compassionate life.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Philemon. It's been an incredible journey, and we hope it sparked some thought-provoking questions for you too.
Me too.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep searching for those bits of wisdom that can help us understand ourselves and the world around us a little better.